Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, our first guest today is Dan Chabelle. He is a New York Times best-selling author, partner, and research director at Future Workplace, and founder of both Millennial Branding and WorkplaceTrends.com. He's a best-selling author of two career books, Promote Yourself and Me 2.0. His third book is about to come out, and you guys can learn more about this. It is called Back to Human, How Great Leaders Create Connection in an Age of Isolation. Holy macaroni! What do you mean an age of isolation, Dan? I mean, we have technology in abundance. How could we be isolated?
The more we use and rely on technology, the more isolated we feel.
You think?
You
know,
you could be in a subway, walking down the street, in a corporate office or co-working space, and be around so many people, but no one at the same time, because people are physically there, but not mentally, emotionally, or spiritually, because they're so busy looking at a device and not at other people. And while technology can be a bridge to human connection, what happens right now in our society is people are overusing it because it's addictive. The technology is designed to get you addicted and release dopamine in your brain, so you're constantly using it and waiting for that next alert instead of actually paying attention to the people you're with.
Mm. True. It says here that you have interviewed over 2,000 of the world's most successful people, including Warren Buffett, Anthony Bourdain, Jessica Alba, on and on and on, Michael Bloomberg, all kinds of interesting people. And this is the kind of thing that I do. But 2,000 people, how long did that take you?
12 years.
Oh, okay.
So and a lot of no's, you know this too. It's like you want to book someone, you have to wait for the right time. And right. If they say no, you wait a little bit more. So I'm very patient. You know, it's some of these interviews have taken me 6, 7, 8 years to get. And because I want to do this for the rest of my life and be in the media world as well as be an entrepreneur, I'm willing to do it because I'm 35. I want to do it for at least 50 more years.
Well, brother, I can tell you that patience is a virtue and it does pay off. I one time stood for an entire day waiting for an interview with a very important person. And when I first walked up, I said, I would like to interview this person. And they said, let us see what we can do. And they said, he said, it might take a little while, but if you wait here, then he will make sure he gets an interview with you. 2 hours went by. They came out and they said, we forgot about you. Our friend just said, please tell you he's almost done, and then he will do an interview with you. Another hour went by, and then they came out again, and they said, we are so sorry. He has a meeting now that he must do, but he would like for you to come back, and if you can come back in an hour or so, he'll try and work you in. I said, I'll wait. I stood there the whole day for the most part, and it was at a big event. I really, really wanted to get this interview. This kept going on until finally he had to leave with his family. He personally came out, and I don't really want to say his name because he's a very important person and I don't want to breach that. But he came out and he apologized to me and he said, please come with me and my family. We're going to our home and I would like to give you a private interview at my home. Wow. And I said, wow, yeah, thank you. I went home. He went and got me food. And he brought me food and sat there and was gracious and talked to me. And I did this amazing, wonderful interview with him because he was present. He was so present for me and he was willing to answer any question I asked. And he had such respect for me because I was patient. And it was one of those life-changing moments for me. I realized that patience is a virtue. And I wasn't being rude when they came out. I was like, oh, damn it, you told me to stay here too. No, I'm like, it's okay. If you really want something, all you have to do is be patient and it will come.
It's a subtle art of patience with persistence. So you have to go at things as hard as you can, but be okay if it takes longer than expected.
That's right. And I was totally okay with it because all I can tell you was it was the most epic interview I believe I've even had to date. One of these days I'll have to whip it out and play it and say, this is an interview that changed my life and my career. But you know what? I have many of those nowadays because I realized the value, the true value of patience and love. And that's really what it is. If you love what you do, it's easy to be patient. And then the interview, the whole process goes better. It's Entrepreneur Weekly. We'll be right back with more Dan Chabel. Stay with us.
Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, we have technology in abundance, and I'm addicted to it. You are addicted to it. And if you're not addicted to it, good for you. Now we have to figure out how to get back to human. So Dan Chabel's joining with us, and his new book, Back to Human, may help us all to be able to find out, you know, how to do that. So, interesting. Here's, you know, kind of a little bit of, I guess, my thinking. Technology has made us, you say, feel isolated. And yet we thought and still think it gives us greater reach and greater capabilities and all these things when it's actually robbing us the foundation of humanity by turning us into these literally addicted creatures.
And the technology is built with that in mind, because the more you use technology, the more money the biggest companies in the world make, like, you know, Apple and Amazon and Google and Facebook. And so they purposely designed technology with addiction in mind. And the more you use technology, the more you want to use it, because every time you get an alert or hear that ding, you want to look at your phone again and again and again, because it releases dopamine. It gets you excited. It pleases your reward system.
Well, it's kind of like a Pavlovian conditioning. You ring the bell every time you feed, and the dogs will come, right? And after a while, you ring the bell, their mouth starts watering. That's us.
Yeah, and not having your phone is the new vacation, right?
Yeah.
If you're not with technology, you can actually be present and enjoy the scenery and environment and the people you're with.
Yeah. It's really sad, I hate to say it, and I'm as addicted as anybody else, and, you know, I find myself, you know, like, reaching for my phone. My grandson is playing, and everybody's playing with the grandson. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh, Facebook and Instagram, everybody's liking my texts, you know, my brain is going. It's like, I can't find myself all of a sudden. It's like a phone! Come on, you guys, it's a phone. Yes, this is really important. So now, the new book, okay. It is called, again, Back to Human, How Great Leaders Create Connection in an Age of Isolation, because, you know, that's where it ends, but because of technology. So what do we do? Give us a little, I mean, you wrote the book, Dan. What do we do?
We have to be smarter with how, when, and where we're using the technology. I think it can do some really profound, smart, great things, like eliminating work you don't even want to do. Like, there's AI chatbots now that will schedule meetings for you. Going back and forth trying to plan a meeting is tedious and stressful, and so technology can eliminate that. But once you're actually in that meeting, once the agenda is set, you need to be present, put your phones in the middle of the table, and actually have a productive meeting. And I swear, if you don't use technology during a meeting and you're present and you're sharing ideas openly, your meetings are not going to take 2 hours, right? And so you can be more efficient during these meetings and actually get to know your coworkers. And work is really about the work you do and who you do it with. So if you don't have strong relationships with your coworkers, if you view them as almost acquaintances, you're more likely to leave. Mm-hmm. And we found that in the global study we did with Virgin Pulse of over 2,000 managers and employees in 10 countries, 7% of employees worldwide have zero friends at work, half have five or fewer. Yet we're spending, in America at least, 47 hours a week on average working. And we're working outside of office hours, on vacation. It's kind of, we're always guilted into continuing doing work, plus the pressures of work. And as a result, if we don't have good relationships with people we're spending a third of our lives with, that's a huge problem.
I have an employee that is a work-from-home type employee. There's, you know, people don't need to be in the office anymore to do certain jobs. They can do them from wherever they are in the world. But this employee feels like I am pressuring for them to work all the time, because I may send an email or a text, you know, after hours, suggesting certain things. How do you deal with the fact that if I have a thought, I want to immediately deliver it? Now, am I sending the wrong message? Should I send myself a note and only send messages during work hours?
Well, I love what happens in other countries. One is in France, they have the right to disconnect. You can't email coworkers when they're not in the office. And then Daimler in Germany, they have mail on holiday. So if you email someone who's on vacation, your email's automatically deleted, which creates the behavior of you not sending emails when they're on vacation because there's a punishment of it being a waste of your time in the first place.
Oh my
God. But I think remote work is the biggest thing that came out of the book. The biggest finding is if you work remote, you're much less likely to want a long-term career at your company.
Yep.
Everyone's always talked about the light side of working remote. I've worked remote for 8 years. You get the freedom and flexibility to work when, where, and how you want. Yet the dark side is the isolation you get from not having the human contact, which is why there's a big responsibility on leaders as well as remote workers.
All right, hold it. More Dan Chabelle right after this. Back to human. It's Entrepreneur Weekly.
Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, and I'm talking with Dan Chabelle. He is a pretty amazing dude. He's won the 40 under 40, the 30 under 30, the 20 under 20, the 10 under 10, the 1 under 1. What haven't you won in all these things? The 1 under 1. He was writing books when he was 9 months old. Anyway. Dan, we were talking about the remote workplace. I deal with this stuff all the time because I own a video production company and my employees, they don't need to live in the town I live in. They don't need to work where we are and inside my building. And, you know, they can show up on the job site, but when I have an idea, I send it to them. So we were kind of talking about that on the backside of the break there, but man, I'm just not sure. I realize you said something very important that, you know, different parts of the world deal with these types of things differently. But coming back to me, because this is my show, what the hell do you think I should do? Should I have a different system as the leader of the company, as the guy at the very top, and they're looking to me to guide them and to be a lamp under their feet? Should I have a company rule? Because I don't want to send the wrong message. My son and his wife, daughter-in-law, work for me. She's having a baby pretty soon. But if I have an idea or a thought, I need her help on something next week, because sometimes she's not even there until, if it's Friday, she doesn't work Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. But if it's next week, I send her a note. Hey, blah, blah, blah. I don't expect her to answer, but I think she feels compelled to answer because, you know, your father-in-law plus the boss sent you a question. Should I be changing my way of thinking, Dan?
I think so. I think you need to set boundaries or allow them to set boundaries so you know what is good behavior, not good behavior, what's permitted, what's not permitted, treating people like adults in the process. And then I think people need different levels of flexibility at different points in their life. As you mentioned, she's having a kid. In 5 years, she's, you know, the kid will be 5 years old. Like, she might not, you know, need as much flexibility then versus now. And so, like, people go through different phases of their human life cycle. And that's why we need, you know, one-on-one conversations between leaders and employees about what's acceptable, what's not, and who needs what level of flexibility.
So really, it's refining myself at the end of the day. I really need to be the one that, of course, reads the book, Back to Human, How Great Leaders Create Connection in an Age of Isolation. So, but here's the other side of that coin. Maybe I have an employee or two that feel isolated, even though I'm barraging them with what I feel is direction, conversation, communication. They don't have a human connection with me enough because they're not in the office. So I have to really, I think a lot of us in business, entrepreneurs in particular, because I'm a 24/7 guy. I take my phone into the shower. I mean, if it rings, I'm like, oop, turn off the water for a second. Hello, act like nothing's going on. Of course, they can hear the echo. I don't know how to stop. So And this has been one of my problems because I love what I do, Dan. You do too.
I'm the same way. I can relate. Right. Yeah. I mean, but here's the thing is that the people who work for you don't have the same level of enthusiasm because they're not the owner and they don't have the same amount of equity.
Yeah.
So in terms of incentives, it's much different. And so we have to respect and empathize with the fact that they're in different situations and have different levels of responsibility. There's a whole chapter. Chapter 9 is Lead with Empathy. So it's about recognizing people's situations, connecting with them and supporting their struggles and things that are impacting their personal life, because you bring your personal life with you to work. Mm-hmm. And if you have a bad experience at work, that impacts your personal life. So everything is interconnected. Right. And we've seen that more and more with technology. So technology has empowered the remote workforce. But at the same time, knowing that people get that level of flexibility, there's a responsibility on themselves, right, to be accountable and to make sure they get in touch with the people they're working with. Right. And then the leader to help facilitate those connections. And what I'm saying in the book with the research we've done is team building activities, social events, and workations are extremely important. If you have to spend $10,000 to fly your remote workers, you know, to an offsite once a year, that's going to be a big deal for you because replacing each of those workers is over $10,000.
Yeah. True story. What is the most interesting finding from your global research study that you did?
The most interesting finding is that if you work remote, you're much less likely to want a long-term career at your company. So working remote affects team and organizational commitment.
Really?
And that's a big deal because employees want freedom and flexibility to work remote. So it's now one of the top employee benefits after healthcare coverage. Yet at the same time, by giving them that flexibility, they end up leaving sooner rather than later.
Dan's company is futureworkplace.com. You can find out more about that, or Dan Schaubel, and that's spelled DanSchaubel.com. You can find him there. I'm a baby boomer. I'm going to be 60 pretty quick. You're 35. You're a millennial. We baby boomers had to move quick and adopt all this technology and kind of work it into our lives. Because when I was growing up, man, I had to hold a phone that was connected to a wall. And you grew up and there was always some kind of a device in your hands. And now whatever the next generations are going to have also other different issues. But we really do need help, all of us, I think, in dealing with this abundance of technology. Because this is the first real generation of people that have too much technology, perhaps.
Teens, for the first time ever, teens report that they would rather text than have a face-to-face conversation. And no other generation has ever reported like that. And that was a study that just came out. And so, Good Lord. I think it's a big deal. And then the research I did for this book matches Cigna's study of 20,000 employees that younger people are lonelier than older ones.
Good Lord. All right, one more segment. This stuff is pretty weird. Dan Schaubel, danschaubel.com, futureworkplace.com. His new book coming out, Back to Human. We'll be right back. Are you paying too much for business insurance? Do you have critical gaps in your coverage? Entrepreneur Insurance can help you find out. In 6 out of 10 policies, business owners are paying too much for property, general liability, or workers' comp insurance. Entrepreneur Insurance can help you identify ways to save and any gaps in coverage. Head to entrepreneur.com/insurance to complete the questionnaire and get a personalized quote. It's an easy way to find out if you're paying too much. Again, that's entrepreneur.com/insurance.
Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Talking with Dan Schaubel. He has a brand new book out. Book launched November 13th. So if you're listening to the podcast, it's on newsstands. I'm sure you can find out more at danschaubel.com. That's S-C-H-A-W-B-E-L.com or futureworkplace.com. Dan, so I'm just curious what the genesis of this book was. Where did it start for you? Or you one day woke up and went, oh my God, I'm Alan Taylor. I answer the phone on the pot. You've turned into me. Where did it start?
Well, it's part of my life's mission to help my generation throughout their whole career life cycle from student to CEO. My first book is Me 2.0 is the height of the Web 2.0 movement. And that helps people get from college to first job. My second book was Promote Yourself. That's first job to management. And this is a leadership book because half of the people my age have a management title and above now. The second part of this is that I was interviewed for a documentary about my generation, the revolution generation. And I was asked for the biggest challenge of the generation. And I said, you know, climate change and world war and many, many issues, student loan debt. But then I turned to isolation. I'm like, oh my God, wait a second. What are we battling on a daily basis? We're battling loneliness, and there's a big loneliness epidemic. A study by Cigna of over 20,000 adults found that half of Americans feel lonely, and this is a bigger emphasis on younger rather than older people, and 40% don't have meaningful relationships. Mm. So to me, this is important because what really matters in life is the relationships we have. When we're 90, we're not thinking about making an extra, you know, $100 a month. We're thinking about, you know, the people we're still in touch with or miss.
Why is it we have such anxiety when we can't find our phones and we are disconnected for a few minutes? I got into the most gigantic argument with my wife one day when she asked me to put my phone down. And I was thinking, no, we've got a daughter who's pregnant and a daughter-in-law that's, and my kids are that, and I can't put my phone down. And we got into this huge argument because I said, I won't answer it. Just let me have it near me. It's like the anxiety. It's like, what the hell? You know? What do you think?
Yeah. I was on a trip to Peru with my friend. And we got out of the cab, and the cab left with his phone. And I would look at his face, and it was almost like he was mourning the death of his parent.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So it was a really big deal for him. And it was awful for me because I had to be the one taking pictures the whole time.
I heard some sort of a statistic that people would rather have a broken bone than to break their phone.
Yeah, half of Americans would rather break a bone than their phone, which means that we have a serious issue on our hands with
really
our own health
serious.
And how we think about technology and our bodies and health.
I got to tell you a funny story. I went to New York. I left my phone. It fell out of my back pocket or whatever in the cab. And I paid the guy and I had the receipt and I put my credit card back in my wallet and I put my wallet in my pocket. And then I went, phone, phone, phone. Phone, you know, like phone was gone. And I ran in. I was meeting a friend for dinner. I ran in there. I go, give me your phone quick. And I called the cab company and I said, I'm with the FBI. I need my phone. I left it in the cab and there's important information on there. And the guy goes, all right, hold on. Believe it or not, you know, it's like the guy came right around the block and brought it back. I didn't know what to do, man. I'm like willing to lie about it. You know, I swear, like you said, your buddy is like, you know, mourning the death of your parent. That phone, we really, truly have a sickness, people. We really need Dan's book, Back to Human. It's a very important book, How Great Leaders Create Connection in an Age of Isolation, and probably you should have added, and how to deal with the loss of a dead phone.
That's a sequel.
Right, exactly. Well, listen, I wish you the best of luck. I understand you're in London right now, calling all the way in.
No, Manchester. I do love London, though.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? Listen, all I can say is the best of luck to you on this book. I hope you do well. I'm glad that, you know, young people are taking a look at this kind of stuff because the millennials, you know, you guys grew up with a little bit more, but us baby boomers, man, it's like we're addicted to this. Forget about pot. Pot was no problem. Phones, that's where the big problem is. So all I can say is thank you. And let's be back in touch and talk more again. This is fun stuff. I appreciate it.
You got it, my friend.
All right. It shines a light on something that is so crazy, this addiction to the phones. It's totally unhealthy. Totally unhealthy. And I'm guilty as hell. That's Dan Schauble. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be right back with more Entrepreneur Weekly.
I got a lot of nice girls.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Don't forget, we're on the web. We have an amazing website, entrepreneur.com. on the newsstands, Entrepreneur Magazine, in your radio right now, or in your headphones, or wherever you're listening, Entrepreneur Weekly. We do this twice a week, once for Saturday and once for Sunday on radio stations around America, and 24/7 on demand for you podcast listeners. So joining us right now, and still in the, I guess we'll call it the always on world that we live in of technology and abundance, Tom Stewart is joining us, and Tom is the executive director of the National Center for the Middle Market. This middle market we're talking about is like $10 million to $1 billion, a very important chunk of the marketplace. But remember, as we are always on, look how much addiction we have to this always on stuff. The thieves, the rotten, dirty dogs that they are also always on and trying to sneak up your rear end to figure out a way to take something from you. Am I right, Tom?
You're absolutely right. You know, the old saw is that there are only two kinds of companies in the world, companies that have been hacked and know it, and companies that have been hacked and don't know it.
Yeah.
And Alan, one of the things that we just have done, you know, we're a research center at Ohio State in the business school, and we just surveyed middle market companies about the question of cybersecurity. How urgent is it? How important is it? Have you been hacked? What are you doing about it? And some of the findings are pretty reassuring, and some of the findings are pretty alarming.
Well, what are some of the key findings within the report?
The first key finding is that a lot of companies are very concerned, and that's the most reassuring finding. We did this survey 2 years ago, or a variation on this survey, many of the same questions 2 years ago. 2 years ago, 56% of the companies we talked to said that cybersecurity was either extremely important or very important, just over half. This year, 71% said it's extremely or very important. So that's good news. I mean, that's jumped by 15 percentage points. I mean, it ought to be 99 and 44 one-hundredths percent.
Right.
But the thing that makes me happy about that is that people in smaller companies have got the message that the hackers aren't just after Target or JP Morgan Chase or the big guys. They're after everybody, and cybersecurity matters for everybody from a dry cleaner on up to Amazon.
Well, hackers and thieves come in all shapes and sizes and ages and different needs and wants. And, you know, I think some of these, they feel like, well, they just fall through the cracks with those big companies, and where the little guy tends to watch his stuff a little closer. Although I did just get some stuff stolen from me, and I'm dealing with the insurance company. I hate it when somebody steals from me. It's horrible. Cyber stuff is even scarier because it's kind of endless.
Well, it's endless, and you may not even know they're stealing. I mean, the average number of days that a company's IT defenses have been penetrated before they find out about it is now about 200 days.
Oh, my gosh.
So more than 6 months, right? You know, you got bats in your attic and termites in your walls for more than 6 months before you know about it. Now, that's down from 270 days 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
But it's still 200 days, right? So, you know, that's like a serious problem. And you hit on something really interesting, Alan, which is the smaller companies used to think these hackers are out there. They don't care about me because I'm too small. They want to go after Fort Knox.
Right.
But the business of cyber attack has changed. And, you know, very commonly you get these phishing email attacks. Those are the most common attacks. And often what happens is ransomware, right? So it's a for-profit business now. They send out phishing attacks. No, because of all the spam you get from other stuff. The production cost of phishing is zero. They send them out to anybody who clicks. And whoever they click on, hey, quick, we've got your network, $10,000 in Bitcoin, or we'll keep your stuff.
Oh,
I heard a horrific story a couple of years ago. Woman who, third generation business, 75 employees, little Sunday supplement printing business in Ohio, started by her grandfather. One Friday night, 4:59, the screen goes black. You know, there's one of these messages, you know, all your data belong to us, whatever it is, pay us $10,000 in Bitcoin.
Right, right.
And she goes, oh my God. And she 2 years later, describing this, she's crying. She's thinking, the company my grandfather founded is going to die on my watch. She goes to her IT guy, and he says, what can we do? And he says, oh, thank God. 2 weeks ago, I moved all our stuff over to a backup server, you know, disconnected, so we've got a mirror site. We're fine.
Oh, my gosh.
2 weeks before. And so it's anybody. One of the things we found in this survey at the National Center for the Middle Market is that 2 years ago, the littlest guys, the guys with revenue between $10 million and $50 million, in our, little for us, right. The little 18% of them, almost one in five, 2 years ago, said, it's not important. Now that number is down to 8%. But still 8% with their heads in the sand.
Yeah.
But that's a big, you know, so people have caught on to the fact that it's a serious issue. So that's the good news.
Well, let me ask you, Tom. By the way, we're talking with Tom Stewart, and you guys can find out more about Tom at middlemarketcenter.org and this whole discussion we're talking about. But what can businesses do?
There are sort of three lines or three types of defense. And one of the things you got to realize is that there is no master lock that you can put on the door.
No silver bullet.
No kryptonite thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no silver bullet. You know, no kryptonite thing like what you can put your bicycle on. It's just, you know, thieves will never get at it. It's got to be company-wide. It's got to be process, people, and technology. And it's got to change because the nature of the threat keeps changing. You know, I sort of think of this as like, you know, you got to get a flu shot every year because the virus is different, because the virus mutates. And you got to update your cybersecurity because it mutates too. And last year's defense won't necessarily help you this year. One of the things you think about is you think about, what do we do to prevent? So that's, you know, what do we do to bar the door, block the door? What do we do to cope? You know, it's happening right now. Your screen has gone black. Your network is unavailable. Your, you know, IoT machines on your factory floor have been hacked. You know, what do you do in the middle of it? And then what do you do for recovery? So one thing. You got to think about three time spans: prevention, you know, before, during, and after.
Let me do this.
And then you got to think.
Let me take a break. Hold still. Let me take a break. And then I'm give people a chance to kind of sit down, pull over. Because I'm going to ask Tom to give us a little bit of, you know, kind of a worksheet of what we should do to protect.
We're going to draw a 3x3 matrix, Alan.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful. All right. You guys can find more information at 3ws.middlemarketcenter.org. Middlemarketcenter.org. We're talking to the executive director of the National Center of the Middle Market. That's you businesses and folks out there that do $10 million to $1 billion. That's some big bucks. But I think that we can all learn from this, even if you're only doing $500,000. Get yourself prepared. When we come back, he's going to give us a worksheet. We'll be right back.
Can't get enough of Entrepreneur Weekly? Check out our podcast on iTunes for even more content. Subscribe today. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, you know, gosh, what can I say? It's a new problem we have in this world today. Businesses are at greater risk for cybersecurity issues due to using weak passwords, opening certain attachments from unfamiliar sources, you know, just all kinds of crazy stuff. So we're talking with Tom Stewart. He is the executive director of the National Center for the Middle Market. So that's, again, $10 million to $1 billion in sales. And he's going to give us a little worksheet of things we can do to protect ourselves from these SOBs. That's all. What can I say, Tom? I don't know what else to call them, right?
I think that's even though the FCC is not regulating that stuff as much as it used to, SOB is probably a good one. My dad was on radio in his college days. The rule was an interview show, you could have two hells and a dam within an hour.
Right. I'm pretty good about it. I make up words, but go ahead. What can we do?
So here it is. When you think about it, you got to think about, what do I do to prevent, to protect myself? What do I do to, you know, to cope in the middle of an attack so I don't have to make it up, so I have something in plans in place?
Right.
And how do I recover? So prevention, coping, and recovery. And then you got to think across three dimensions. So if you think about before, during, and after, our three dimensions now are people, processes, and technology. So you got nine boxes in there, right? And you got to think about, the people issues are absolutely critical. You were talking about how people click on an email, so on and so forth. You can have the best technology in the world, but people will make dumb mistakes if you don't train them. And that means everybody. It means the security guard. It means the admin. It means the CEO. It means everybody's got to be alert for phishing things. You got to train them. You got to test them. And you got to make them realize that that's important.
Right.
Also, when you think about during, right? Who's in charge? Who are you going to call? Do you already know the people at the FBI or the people at your law firm that you've got to talk to? So you've got to set all that stuff before, during, and after with the people. Processes, too. Again, what's the order? How do we do this? How do we, you know, how do we set up processes? For example, processes for onboarding people so that they learn the stuff that they need to do. You have a process dimension before, during, and after. And finally, you've got a technology dimension. I say finally, partly because particularly for smaller companies, this may be stuff buying or renting. I mean, if I've got a team of 25 in my company, or 75 or 100, the odds of my being able to hire a world-class cybersecurity team are less than zero, right? I mean, there's negative unemployment in cybersecurity. So odds are you're going to be going out to a Cisco or a Microsoft or an Amazon or other local provider. So you'll be working with somebody whose technology will help you. So that's your landscape that you want to fill in. You know, on our website, we've got a self-assessment tool. We got like three or four questions. We remember those nine boxes: before, during, after, people, processes, and technology. And you can take that assessment. It's things like, you know, and you've got like four or five questions inside each one, and you can score yourself and you can say, holy mackerel, we're empty in this box. We haven't gotten anything, or we're limp, we're weak over here. So it can give you a way to get started. You know, once the problem's mapped, it's a lot less daunting. You know?
So at the end of the day, mapped,
like, it's like my closet. I don't know where to start.
Right.
You know, but with this, I can at least start.
At the end of the day, it's really educate yourself. That's like arming yourself to protect yourself. So best place for people to find more information, I have to assume your website. Is there a place on the website?
If you go on our website, middlemarketcenter.org, there's a thing that says Knowledge Center, and there's a drop-down menu there, and there's a tab there under there that says cybersecurity. So that's probably the easiest way to do it, or you could just do National Center for the Middle Market Cybersecurity, and it would come up. But that would be the drop-down menu under Knowledge Center has a cybersecurity thing there with a whole research center focused on smaller companies.
Well, we certainly appreciate you taking the time, and Ohio State for putting you guys in this role to be able to do this, because cybersecurity is such an I guess kind of a new issue for the general public and small business and medium business, in your case, middle market. And we are horribly uneducated on how to deal with it. So thank you.
Alan, thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about it.
All right, once again, middlemarketcenter.org. That's about it for me for this hour. There is a lot more where this came from at entrepreneur.com. See you next week. See you next time. See you next hour.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.